Hiya, and welcome to Brain Injury Bites, where we provide help and advice for people after a brain injury. My name's Brooke, and I've lived with a traumatic brain injury since 2007.
Hi, I'm Ashwini, and I'm a trustee at Headway Warrington. I'm also a senior associate solicitor focusing on catastrophic injury, including brain injury.
Thank you for returning to listen to part two of this interview. Well, just coming back to the subacute phase, something that you mentioned earlier, which I just wanted to pick up on. I mean, I'm guessing it's probably a very challenging time in somebody's rehab journey because, you know, when you're talking about the acute phase, it's very much management of, but somebody's out of it. So you're just working with their body to make sure that things are sort of ticking over, if you like. But when once somebody's in that subacute phase, you're learning, they're learning about how their brain injury is actually impacting mm-hmm. them and what their limitations are and where those challenges come about. And I guess there's also a lot of expectation management, just like Brooke was saying, you know, I want to walk, you know, why are people telling me I can't walk? But it's actually, you know, literally don't run before you can walk.
Yeah, and this is the time where we set ourselves up for the long term for kind of success or failure.
Mm.
So you can set really good foundations for future recovery at this stage, getting good habits in how you're moving and getting those habits in, getting good habits about fatigue management, about exercise, about how you function, set you up for the future. But the opposite can happen as well, that if someone really goes at it like a bull in a china shop and he's doing too much and he's practicing the wrong movements in the wrong manner and he's getting fatigued, then they will reinforce bad movement patterns. And the body is quite pragmatic. It will do what it needs to do. So a simple example would be, if I was out running, I sprained my ankle. Within two or three steps, I'll have developed a new way of running.
Yeah.
It might be rubbish.
Yeah.
It might be painful, but you compensate so quickly. But the brain does that as well. The brain compensates, and neuroplasticity is the way that the brain compensates after injury. So what will happen there is, right, I can't move the way I used to do, but I still need to get to that chair in the corner of the room that you mentioned before.
Find a way that's most comfortable for you.
And it might be a bit of a clumsy way. Yeah. It might be an inefficient way. So it would be for the physiotherapist to kind of identify that and say, actually, why don't you try this? Or why don't we look at that? So looking at quality of movement.
Mm.
And the physiotherapist should have a really good knowledge of what normal movement looks like, because then they need to analyse what's changed. Now, the tricky thing with that sometimes is, I know what normal movement looks like by a textbook, but I don't know what Brooke's normal was before your injury.
You're nobody probably comes, not that normal.
But nobody comes in for a pre-brain injury check.
Yeah.
I'm going to have an accident next week.
Yeah.
Just check me over this
exactly.
week.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to happen. We don't know how people moved. But what I'll quite often ask is, have you got a video of you running before? Have you got a video of you walking down the aisle at your wedding?
Do you know? You've
got those things, because you think, right, I can see, and I can see quite subtle things.
Yeah.
Of
somebody's gait pattern.
So we're looking at how we revisit that.
Yeah.
And then we're looking at how we put that into practice. So from the subacute, so you've had your hospital time and you're going home. And this is sometimes where things can start to fall apart a little bit. So you go home and you realise, actually, you know, this is really difficult. I can't move as well as I used to. In the hospital, everything was done to me. Cups of tea were brought to me. Food was brought to me. I was washed. But now I've got to do all that myself. And that's really tiring.
Yeah. And I might have to walk up several flights of stairs, which I didn't really have to do in hospital.
Yep. So and there's often a bargaining at this stage in terms of, right, you want to go home. Obviously, you want to go home. Some people try and get themselves discharged too early. I was seeing someone the other day and he said, I really wish I'd stayed in for another few months.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because
you're eager to get out, aren't you?
But getting the rehab later on can be tricky. It's all right getting it while you're in hospital, because there's a kind of an expectation that you'll get the therapy in hospital. But what happens when you go is a bit of a, I hate to use the phrase, postcode lottery, but it depends. Sometimes you'll get really good therapy, but how long that lasts for. But you said at the beginning of the discussion, this is a life. You know, you're going to need some input for life. And I know you still do stretches, you still do exercise, you still manage your condition. And what we've got there quite often is, how engaged is the client in their long-term rehab. So that's my particular interest. How do we keep you engaged? And how do we keep you doing what you do? Because one thing I'm certain of, and you can tell me I'm wrong if I'm wrong here, Brooke, that at some point you've been given sheets of exercises by a physiotherapist and they've said, do those and we'll see you in a week.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Did you do them?
No. Like that's a no.
No, I would say no, because...
But if you didn't do them, you're probably part of 99% of people who wouldn't do them.
I can definitely say I fall within that category. Yeah. I've previously injured myself, been given that sheet, done nothing.
Yeah, and that happens. But it doesn't stop physios giving sheets of exercises out. And one of the tricks we could do, here's a little inside knowledge, is if you go along to see a client and you've given them some exercises and you'll say, and have you done your exercises since last week? They go, oh, yes, of course I've done.
Yeah.
Or do you want to just run through them for me? And you see a look of panic on their face that they obviously haven't. And they'll fudge something together that looks like it might have possibly done. And then you say, well, I left you an exercise sheet. Where's that? And you can see another look of panic because they think, oh, crikey, I haven't got...
It's crumpled up at the bottom of a bag somewhere.
So I would suggest the physio saves the time and doesn't give them the exercise in the physio.
So how do you keep somebody motivated and engaged?
Right, this is what I was steering the conversation into.
I feel like you're a podcast professional here, Colin.
What we'd look at there is the kind of therapeutic alliance, which is what I did my master's looking at, is that relationship between therapist and client. How do we get the most engagement from a client? And there were three things. There was something called goals, tasks and bonds.
Okay.
So it was an old article and they looked into the goals. So what you, Brooke, what do you want to be able to achieve?
Yeah.
The tasks, how are you going to achieve it? But really importantly is the bond. So do you believe the person who's asking you to do it? Have you got a relationship with that person? Now, if I came into your house and said, right, what's your goals? What's your tasks? And then you thought, he's an idiot. You know, I'm not going to trust. I don't believe a word he says. I mean, look at him. He looks like he never exercises himself anyway. So you could think all those things. And the likelihood of you actually doing that exercise goes down. So there's a real link between that bond between the therapist and client and clinical outcomes.
I'd never thought about that, the importance of the therapeutic relationship. I mean, I know in my practice I talk about the therapeutic relationship between my clients and their therapists, clinicians, but I never really thought about how important that is for the success of that person's rehabilitation from a very practical, emotional point of view.
Yeah, well, and quite often we'll have clients who say, I do it because I don't want to let you down, which is, it's partway there, isn't it?
Yeah.
At least you're doing it. But when I'm not there and when they've been discharged and when they get on with their life, I'm not. You know, they've got to have an inner drive. So the way that we work at it and within our practice at Physio Matters, what we encourage is looking at this kind of an activity-based thing. So if we can get someone involved in an activity that is engaging, that is fun, that is exciting, a lot of the clients we see are young lads who are risk takers and love excitement. So for me to give them a sheet of exercises, just save the paper. So, but if I say, right, let's do some work on skiing. So let's go skiing or let's play football or let's do kayaking and get that person a new hobby or a hobby they previously did that they're then engaged in.
Yeah.
So kayaking would be a good example. So what kayaking would look at is it would look at trunk control. It would look at trunk rotation. It'd look at strength. It'd look at aerobic capacity. It'd look at balance. So there's loads of different ways you can get the same thing, whereas the client won't necessarily equate that with, I'm not doing physio, I'm just going kayaking for an hour.
Yeah, I'm having fun.
Yeah. And the same with skiing.
Loads of benefits. Core strength there, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got about 18, 20 different activities that we can offer. And some of them are adaptive activities. Most of them are adaptive activities. So we can get clients engaged in those. And that's the way we want to push our rehab, and we get really good results.
I mean, I suppose that's true of anything in a way, that if you're invested in something, you're more likely to keep on at it. If somebody said to me, go, you know, you want to lose weight, go running, it's not going to happen. I go swimming most mornings because it's something that I genuinely enjoy and am motivated to do. So, you know, that will have the benefit that I'm seeking in the longer term. And I guess the same is with that. Like you say, sheet exercise is not going to work.
They're not going to work.
Get somebody engaged in the activity, enjoying it. And I suppose in the background, you've got those subtle benefits that they're not necessarily aware of. But, you know, over
as a physiotherapist, we're still monitoring how they're doing, but we're doing it in a slightly more subtle way. Yeah, so I would be the opposite to you. So if someone told me to go swimming, I'm not good enough at swimming to get any aerobic benefit from it.
Yeah.
Go running, I could run for days. Yeah. So I'm quite happy running. So it's looking at what
the individual things.
Yeah. And so for some people it might be relating to a pre-injury activity.
Mm.
So we've treated some professional footballers. And would they want to go back to football? Possibly not.
Mm.
We saw a rugby player, and we mentioned about him doing wheelchair rugby, and he said there's no way I'd go near it because it's not the activity
that he did previously.
But then someone else was at the golfer, and he wanted to go back to it because he wanted to see how close he could get his handicap to how it was.
Yeah.
Prior.
And I suppose for some people it is about rediscovering it in the same way we talked about Brook 1, Brook 2. It's kind of, who is this new person and what interests them and what will keep them motivated to keep going at the rehab?
We had a lovely client that we've been seeing, and prior to her injury, she didn't do a lot of exercise at all. And she did lead quite an unhealthy lifestyle. And what we've got her involved in is a walking netball group.
Okay.
And now she does the walking netball group, regardless of physio. It's her thing that she does every week. And one of the important things there is she's got the activity, but she's also got a group of friends who know her, who kind of make allowances for her difficulties. And she's incorporated in this, and they will do all different activities. So it's almost there that the walking netball is a way to other things.
Yeah.
And because she's done walking netball, she's just started looking at paddleboarding.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, but these are activities she'd have never done prior to her injury.
That's amazing.
So, it's really exciting. And, I mean, from our physio point of view, it means that sessions are engaging and dynamic.
Yeah, more exciting.
Yeah, they're much more exciting. You look forward to that.
Yeah. And I guess it's going on the journey with them, discovering, like you're discovering who that new person is in as much as they are discovering their new identity.
One of the key things to success here is engaged and active and fit support workers.
Yeah.
We really need support workers that are going to go on that journey with the client in between our physio sessions as well.
Yeah.
So we want clients who are going to be positive, support workers who are going to be positive role models and can keep up with a client, to be honest. Because we've got a lot of quite fit clients.
But unfit support workers.
Unfit support workers are... And because the client was really fit prior to their injury, like you need a support worker who can keep up.
Yeah. I mean, we've kind of gone into some of the, I'm not going to call it chronic either, I'm going to call it longer term physio, particularly talking about some of the running aspects. But I guess moving into that phase, what are the sorts of, how does your journey as the neurophysio evolve with your clients there?
I think a few different ways it can evolve. With some clients, we know that we're going to have to maintain a kind of hands-on approach, probably for life.
Mm.
You know, they're going to need stretches that are quite complicated, or the handling needs might be quite difficult, or the level that they're functioning at might be quite hard. They might still be wheelchair-based. They might still always need transfers. So for some clients, that is the kind of steady plateaued stage is that they're wheelchair users. And sometimes that can be working with a client to say, walking isn't the end for everyone. For some people, being a wheelchair user gives you more independence than someone who's going to be walking.
Yeah.
So you may be able to get further, you may be less fatigued, you may be able to function at a much higher level. I had this discussion recently with a chap who's a very high level amputee. And he tried for 3 years to walk on a prosthetic leg, and it didn't work because his stump was so short. So he wasn't able to fit his leg effectively on there. So we had a talk about him, with him, saying that what is independence? And for him, independence is being a wheelchair user. Yeah. It means he can get out, he can be independent.
Yeah.
Whereas had he been having to put on a big clumsy leg all the time, he was much less independent. And he actually spoke to me a few weeks ago after the session. He said, "Colin, can I have a word with you?" I thought we were in trouble. but he said, "You've saved my life."
Oh, that's nice. Oh,
wow. He said, "You've saved my life." He said, "Because I had no hope before we started coming here. But I've got hope. I know the direction I'm going in." And that was someone that we'd had quite a frank discussion with, saying, "You're never going to be able to use a limb.
Yeah.
Your future is a wheelchair future, but being able to do some work on your single leg." And he said, I can't believe the difference. He said, I wouldn't be here had you not been involved.
Yeah,
so although that's not brain injury, it's still relevant.
No, but I mean, it's reframing identity, which, you know, we've talked about in the context of brain injury. And it's also that as a clinician, as a therapist, sort of that expectation management. And I think it also brings into focus that although you are a neurological physiotherapist, it's so much more than just physiotherapy. It is that kind of multifactorial approach. It's almost psychological in many respects, as well as, you know, looking at sort of the OT angle of what can somebody actually do. And yeah,
that's why at the beginning of the discussion I said the multidisciplinary approach. I think it's more than just when you have a multidisciplinary team meeting every 3 months. That approach needs to go into every profession's sessions. So everyone is aware of what are the things I need to consider. So say if I'm communicating with you, what are the speech and language therapy guidelines for this? If there's psychological issues, what's the best way of framing these questions? So taking the whole MDT into each session.
It's holistic.
That's a better way of putting it.
It absolutely is. Because, I mean, I suppose, you know, every individual is a complex ball of everything. You can't just look at single issues. So,
and this is why it's so fascinating. And this is why, coming back right to the beginning of the discussion, this is why I work in this area.
Yeah.
Because it is so fascinating, so multifactorial, so holistic. And, yeah, it's, I always say, because people compare themselves with other people, but I always say to clients, but you weren't the same before that client. So you weren't the same as someone else with a brain injury before the accident. So why on earth would you be the same now?
Yeah.
Things are different.
Moving into sort of your fourth phase, if you like, adjustment and condition management. I take it you probably don't need to do that with every client?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't answer your last question. Thank you. So it is looking at, you know, what the next phase is. And what we'd look at as well is, does someone always need physio? You know, how do we, with the nicest phrase, how do we get rid of you?
I suppose you don't want to over-therapize somebody.
Yeah, exactly. So sometimes it might be that the physio needs to carry on being involved. Other times it might be that the support workers need to be involved and we pull back a little bit.
They need some input though, don't they? Because that's one thing that can happen with brain injuries, that your treatment can stop, and then that's when, you know, there could be so much more done with them, but the input stops, and that's when depression kicks in because they don't know what to do.
And sometimes you could say, right, sometimes people benefit from a therapy holiday because by this point they've had a lot of therapy and they can be a bit sick of us all. So to have a break from therapy and then but to come back to it, and if someone says to me, "Yeah, well, let's have a break from therapy and I'll give you a call in the future."
Oh,
that's never going to happen. Yeah. Let's say in 3 months, we'll give you a call. All right, better still, I'll come out and see you. And I might be able to spot things that have gone a little bit awry that we can just tweak and then send you on your way again. So it's much easier to tweak things and get the improvement rather than have to undo things.
So,
so sometimes our work would be handed over to support workers, family, or to you yourself. But but sometimes people need a kick up the bum as well.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about goal setting, because we talk about this a lot in multidisciplinary teams, team meetings, and, you know, getting people to where they want to be. And the goals that we look at tend to be very sort of client focused. It's the client setting those goals. I want to be able to achieve this and so on. But, you know, again, coming back to the point before about making sure that we're managing expectations, not setting people up to fail, not trying to run before we can walk. Can you give us, from your sort of own experience, examples of, you know, somebody might have a longer term goal, but it's the steps in between to get them to that?
I've got a good example of this is one lady, she wanted to be able to walk without any walking aids. At the time that I went to see her, she was not able to get out of a chair.
Mm.
So, but all she could see is, well, I just want, but that wasn't just, she wasn't going to jump from that to that.
No.
So she loved doing crafts, arts mm-hmm. and crafts. What we decided is we'd split the goal up into little stages. So there was 15 stages between where she was now and where she would be in the future. So what I got her to do is, she liked building models. So she built a model 15 steps. So she built a staircase.
Yeah.
And she decided she'd draw a happy face on a tangerine. So she moved, each step was one of her goals. So the first step would be that she could sit without any support behind her back.
Okay.
The next stage would be that she could bring her bottom to the front of the chair. The next stage would be that she could come up into standing with someone in front of her, et cetera, et cetera. So we built them down and put them on a sheet. And each of the steps, for sake of argument, went 1 to 15. And each time she achieved one, she moved the tangerine up the steps until it was at the top.
Okay.
Yeah. So she could see that every day. She put it on a fireplace.
Yeah.
And she could see this. It was massive. This model of this tangerine moving up. So she
I'm
could.
I'm picturing that's a wilting good tangerine.
Yeah. It was like the, could the lettuce last longer than the time?
Yeah.
It was that kind of analogy.
That's a good. Yeah, good analogy, though, isn't it?
So we learnt two things there. She didn't get to the end.
Okay.
But she got partway up the steps.
Yeah.
And also that tangerines are quite resilient.
Perfect.
So looking at that visual representation is what I'm saying. That's quite an extreme version. But to have a visual representation of this is where I am now, this is where I want to be, but give little goals in between so you can see that you're making progress.
And I suppose, perhaps as part of that process, sometimes that person's eventual end goal changes as they get partway through the rehab and realise that actually maybe that's not what I want anymore. A bit like your chap with your high-level amputee who's, you know, adamant that he wanted to walk with a prosthetic and then actually reframe that to say, you know, I'm a wheelchair user but a very active wheelchair mm-hmm. user.
Yeah,
and that can be quite an important realisation.
From this, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think there is that. And I'm sure you'd agree, Brooke, there's that reframing of your goals as you go along.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't necessarily understand it from the start, do you? So as you learn, it causes changes.
The number of people when I worked on the stroke ward who would say, so long as I get walking and you send me home, don't worry about my arm not working. We'll sort that out later on. So they get up walking, they get home, and then you go, what about my arm?
Yeah.
And you say, then it becomes a priority. But I really love the fact that clients are so motivated and still keep pushing you, saying, yeah, I said I wanted to be able to achieve this. I've achieved this now, but I'm still not happy. I want to be able to achieve the next stage. So, which is, sounds like your kind of journey, especially with your Great North Run exploits.
Oh, yeah.
Well done.
You're never satisfied, are you?
You're never satisfied and you're never finished.
Yeah.
You're always a work in progress.
But that's a good thing. I think that's human nature as well. We're never static. We always have to keep pushing forwards.
And after a neurological condition, I often say it's like trying to stay still on an escalator, on a down escalator. Sometimes you've got to work really hard to maintain.
Right.
And that's one of our functions in the longer term, in this kind of long-term condition thing, is you've got a long-term condition.
Yeah.
But also you're getting older.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we need to work.
That's something that's happened with me recently.
But it's a privilege to get older, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
The other option's not brilliant.
No.
So, I mean, I do expert witness work, and it's one of the things we'd obviously build into treatment, you know, into a report, sorry, is that you need a contingency of funds
mm-hmm.
for the future when, okay, perhaps you're going to keep improving, plateau. Then as you get older, you might need more. You might need more input to keep at that same level.
Yeah, to maintain that, because, yeah, your body changes. We're all crumbling away.
Slowly.
Just to change tack completely, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about some of, just to give some examples of some of the equipment that you use, and also, you know, where you do your physiotherapy with your clients. Do you do it in clinic? Do you do it out in the community? And just the benefit of some of the sort of technology that there is.
Mm-hmm. If I answer the location-wise, sure. One first is, I think we're quite unique as a practice at Physiomatters in that we do treat people in a massive range of locations in terms of, so it might be at the ski slope, it might be at one of, I think we've got 7 different hydro pools we use, it might be at countless gyms, kayaking facilities, loads of them, it might be at a rifle range, it might be at axe throwing, it might be doing work up on the hills or on the fells, or, you know, so there's it or in someone's workplace. Mm. So there's really wherever someone has the issues. And we really feel that the community is the focus of where people are having the problems, especially later on.
Yeah.
And a lot of our clients have had a lot of therapy in the past.
Mm.
So they've been through the, like we said before, the acute, the subacute, the chronic. And it's, what are you going to do with the recovery you've made?
Mm.
You know, where is it going to be most appropriate to, how are you going to live your life? Yeah. To
I suppose, yeah, because if you do it in a gym all the time, it's quite an artificial environment in that it's a gym, but it's not dealing with negotiating rocky paths on in the hills, for example.
And that would be something I'd try and build in as much as possible to expert reports. So, you know, if I see someone walk from one end of the room to the other, that's not giving me an idea of someone's balance. That's telling me they can walk from one end of a room to the other. It's not giving that. But so I think location is really important. Mm. Also, getting clients out of the house and getting, you can build a physiotherapy session into a much busier day, into a much more active day. So if you're going to one place, what else can be involved in that day?
Mm.
The other thing you asked about was about equipment.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking about things like the Alter-G?
The Alter-G, yeah. So we've got access to 3 or 4 different Alter-G machines, which, for listeners, is it's an anti-gravity treadmill. So you put a pair of cycling shorts on, zip yourself into a big plastic bag on top of a treadmill.
Sounds great.
I'm sure on the website they describe it better than this. Inflates it and you can reduce your body weight by 80%.
Wow.
So it's like walking on the moon.
Mm.
So I use it particularly for people who fatigue easily in activities, but also for people who are at a higher level and looking at running, and because it's a really safe way of exploring movements. You can do lots of fun things on it. You can do work backwards, you can do work forwards, uphill, downhill. You can look at running and you're not going to fall over in it.
Does it also ease some pressure on joints and things like that?
Yeah, and that's why it was brought over. It was brought over for the likes of Paula Radcliffe.
Mm.
So she could do high levels of training at low impact. So, but we can use it for slightly different ways. We can use it for clients with MS, so for that same kind of reason that it's not effortful, but you can still look at patterns of movement.
Mm. Sounds interesting. I'll have to look up.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. And all the football teams have them, so they can increase volume whilst reducing impact.
So how does that, I mean, in the context of someone with a brain injury, how does that benefit them? I mean, leaving aside the physical benefits in terms of, you know, low impact, etc. How does that interplay with the neurological side of things?
For me, it would be because often confidence is an issue with mobility. So if you've got that safety blanket, we can try and the neuroplasticity happens by trying novel things.
Okay.
So we can try novel things in a safe environment, which hydrotherapy is really good, and we do lots of hydrotherapy. But the resistance and the turbulence create a slightly different feeling than it would be in the Alter-G.
Yeah.
So, and if I'm looking at really fast walking or running, then we can get the neuroplasticity working better in that kind of safe environment because you've not got the fear of falling and that impacting on performance. So, yeah, we can get, it's not the same as in the real world, but it's pretty close and it's a risk-free way of working. Other piece of equipment that we use a functional electrical stimulation. I think called the L300 Go, which is a stimulator that helps you lift your toes up when you're walking. So it's got some fancy gadgetry in it. in terms of as soon as you lift your heel up off the floor. So if you're walking, you have heel strike, weight bearing through your foot. As soon as your heel comes up, it stimulates tibialis anterior, the muscle on the front of your shin, to lift your toes up. So it stops foot drop.
Okay.
So you can use that. And what's good is, because of the electronics in it, it learns your pattern of walking, and it can vary between if you're walking fast, if you're walking slow, it will go with you. So we can prescribe that.
So the more you use it, the better it gets.
Yeah, and you can use it at walking really fast, and you can now use it without using any wearing any shoes. You can use it, you know, on the beach, so which is much better than the splints that I was talking about before that are a plastic thing that you just have to strap on you. They do have the things, but we can do assessments for those. And then just next week, we're doing a trial of another piece of equipment called the Molly Suit, which is the same manufacturer, which is a Lycra garment that has 58 different electrodes on that kind of give you help with your postural control. So we're quite excited to see how that will go. So we'll be releasing more information.
Oh, I'm interested to know how that would work, like how those electrodes would actually help your posture.
I mean, what you can do is there's 58 electrodes kind of sewn into this suit, and the suits are bespoke. But what we can do then is we program which of the electrodes fire. So if you're doing a particular activity, we can put a bias on. Some of the electrodes are firing and others are switching off. So we can. So I'll tell you more when I've done the training next week.
Yeah. I suppose that would be really helpful if somebody's, the impact of somebody's injury is that, you know, they might neglect certain parts of their body. Mm-hmm. So by having that stimulation, you can get those parts sort of reactivated in a way.
Yeah. And if sitting and working up against gravity can be hard work.
Yeah.
So initially when we looked at, when you're in hospital, Brooke, just being able to sit is fatiguing because gravity is pushing down on you. Whereas if we can use these suits that would keep that position and that'd be less effortful.
Yeah. It's amazing how much you take movement for granted.
And that's why when movement becomes a cognitive activity rather than automatic activity, it's really tiring.
Yeah.
Because ordinarily you wouldn't have to think about walking. Just crack on with it.
If you had the thinking in there as well.
Yeah. So that's why if you're walking through a busy street and you're trying to remember what you need to get from the shop, you've got various demands on you on you there.
That's what brain injury's done for me. It's just made me aware of all the different functions that go on in your body and how they all are.
We're bloody marvellous, really, aren't we?
Well, that was absolutely fascinating, Colin. I'm really looking forward to learning more about the advances in technology that can assist with physiotherapy. But I think it's been really, really interesting just understanding how important physiotherapy is as part of somebody's rehabilitation journey following a brain injury. So just from Brooke and myself, thank you so much for coming in. For our listeners as well, we will put Colin's details on the notes to the episode, but perhaps Colin, if you just want to give some of your contact details out if anyone wants to get in touch.
We will be publicising about any new developments we have at Physio Matters, and our website is physio-matters.org. So that's really easy. And we're on all the different social medias. Yeah, our phone number is 0161 681 6887, but I'm sure all these details are on the notes. And yeah, if you've got any questions, feel free to contact us in any way through the website.
Yeah.
You know, and ask us questions. We'd be happy to talk through issues.
Oh, no, that's really helpful. Thank you. And yeah, once again, just thank you so much for coming in, talking to us about all those interesting issues. Please don't forget to follow, subscribe and share our content. If you do have any suggestions for topics that you'd like us to cover, why not drop us a line at hi@braininjurybites.co.uk.